Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, world? It's Badass Thugging like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Yo, yo, check this out. This is your girl, Cola Vogue, and I'm chilling with my boys right here on Off the Cuff Radio. Because we off the cuff right now. You dig?
What's up? It's your boy Lil Yap from LV, bragging up from the river, cooling with my homies and my family at Off the Cuff Radio. Y'all be sure to tune in on Fridays and get the latest scoop and find out what's happening. You hear me?
Tiffany Levine.
And it's Queen Crazy, your girl favorite bartender.
And we're from
Sex on the Rocks podcast.
Alright, you're now tuning in to Off the Cuff Radio.
Yeah, because they keep representing that world hip hop. Well, much love.
Alright.
Y'all, this is Miss Ebony Jones, and you're tuned in to Off the Cuff giving a shout out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey y'all, this is Stacey Lachey giving a shout out to King Eric and Off the Cuff Radio.
What's shaking, y'all? This is the Grand, one half of Lost Cause and one third of that Drive Time thing. Sending my love to the homies over at Off the Cuff Radio. Tune in every Friday night for some real, deal hip-hop conversation. These dudes are the connoisseurs of this thing. You already know what it is. BX Stand Up, Hud City, was shaking. Peace.
Yo, this is Joe Fresh the Dime, and y'all tuned in to the most raw, untouched show on radio. The Guillotine Team, Off the Cuff, and yo, Eric Sandman, off of these clowns.
Must be the season, man. Everybody wants to smoke.
Nah, they don't want it.
You don't want smoke with me, boy.
Never that.
Don't testify.
Off.
Hit the brakes, no gas. You don't really want no trouble. You can hate your
mess.
But you don't really want no smoke. But you don't really want no smoke. Oh, 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 oh. You don't really want none.
You don't want smoke with the big guns. Chest pains I cause with it could be the big one. Add a little finesse to the beat. I'm the kick drum. Better get intelligent quick before it gets dumb. I defeated guards of war before now. So did a lot of dirt like Ace, Mitch, and Alpo. Always like Endo, even when I'm out though. Album go hard all the way to the outro. Ask anybody you know about Brody. Touch anything to mine and you die slowly. Cursed like a demon, having nightmares, screaming, waking up cold sweats, no breath, will weaken. Looking in the mirror for answers I can't find. Slow dancing with the time is like a cancer to the mind. They say seeking you shall find, but I found madness. In a world full of beasts, I come out savage.
Hit the brakes, no gas. Y'all really want no trouble. You can hate your
mess.
But y'all really want no smoke. But you don't really want no smoke. Oh, 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 oh.
Oh.
You don't really want none.
Told you you don't really want that. Sometimes you go down and ain't no comeback. I done had to make my own way. What a comeback. Took it from the 20 to a go like a run back. I ain't never been an Avenger. I'm a ninja. Just wanna be a born defender, a contender. But never been content with having the same swagger. All the week swept up in the snap is pure rapture. Better hold everyone that you love dear. Cause this hard cold, homie, ain't no love here. You can get scarred if your skin ain't tough here. Yeah, this your final destiny, but ain't no frontier. Cause I came to conquer, Big Street the monster. And heart can't beat me, and neither can your father. Captain America, I came to slaughter. It's a mess, time to reclaim the order.
Hit the brakes, no gas. You don't really want no trouble. You can hate your mess. But you don't really want no smoke. Oh, oh, oh. but you don't really want no smoke. Oh, 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 oh. You don't really want none.
Infinity stones. I carry that power like Thanos, making me hard to handle. Don't touch the waters. Don't touch it. Don't touch the fire.
Need to break no gas. Don't really want no trouble. You can hate it mad, but you don't really want no smoke. But you don't really want no smoke. You don't really want none.
Tune in to episode 386 of the livest, most direct show, not only on the internet, but on the streets, Off the Cuff Radio, produced by King Eric Productions, sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing, sponsored by Jesse Boutique, Core Financial, Buddy Boy Entertainment, Screwball Radio. I have T-Max with the Facts in the building, my co-host.
What it do, what it do. Another fire Friday night. OTC up in the building. Shout out to our co-host in spirit, a lot of Sandman and Lee Chinchilla. King Eric is the head host, and I am the courageous co-pilot, T-Max with the Facts, and we are here live and direct. What it do?
Yes, indeed, man. And that joint we played just now was called Thanos from our guest of the evening. This guy here, from what I've heard, he's an assassin on that microphone. And he's repping NY to the day he dies. So, without further ado, let's bring on our guest of the evening, Streets the Villain, y'all.
Yeah. Salute, salute, salute. How y'all doing, man?
What's good, my brother?
Chillin', man. Coolin', coolin', man. Glad to be here, man. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Look, we're happy to have you on, man. Look, you know, one of the reigning kings of the Big East, you know, going for the crown, putting it down, man. We're so elated. We're so honored. We're so privileged to have you on the show, man. Thank you.
Appreciate it, fam. Happy to be here.
Definitely, man. So, you know, we all, you know, kicked up, you know, and it's, hey, we're about to go ahead and jump right into it, man. So, like King said, you from up top in the NY, man, the Big Apple. Tell us about where you rep, where you, you know, where you've come up, you know, and the inspiration from the past to the present, you know, in the future, you know, all from the beginning, the genesis, you know, of your tremendousness.
Okay. Well, let's see, man. I'm originally born in Syracuse, New York. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Okay.
And when I turned probably about 10 years old, we moved out to California. You know what I'm saying? Out to Oceanside, California. So, you know, got a good taste of the East and the West. You know what I'm saying? So definitely got to tap into, you know, what they had going on the West Coast too. You know, so. A lot of my vibe you hear be West Coast also influence. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, growing up, you know, I listened to all the great ones, you know, from Rakim to Big Daddy Kane to LL Cool J. I'm an 80s baby, you know, so any of the rappers that came out in the 80s, Father MC, Special Ed, Grand Poobah, Brand Nubians, you know what I'm saying? On the West Coast, I listened to DJ Quick and Second to None, E-40, Brother Lynch Hung, of course, Snoop and Dre, you know, all the greats out there, man. you know. So I got a wide influence in this hip hop thing, you know.
Definitely, man.
Studying the greats,
coming from
underground and popular.
That's a fact,
yeah, man. I mean, and definitely coming from Syracuse. First and foremost, we got to give out shouts to, you know, the Syracuse Orange representing up there. Mm. You know, of course,
no doubt,
shout
no
out
doubt.
To Coach Boeheim. Yeah, man. I mean, of course,
no
you know, taking it to the basketball hardwood. You know, of course, Donovan McNabb, Jared McNamara, some guy named Carmelo
mm-hmm.
Anthony. I think you might have heard of him. You know, Conrad
yes,
McRae. You know,
yes,
of course, you know, football, man. I mean, shucks, man. I mean, shucks, Marvin Harrison. You know, Quentin Spotwood. You know,
yeah, you know, Carmelo came out of Syracuse. Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, of course, man. Yeah, we said, yeah, I said Carmelo. Couldn't forget Melo, the Melo man, of course.
Yeah, yeah,
Conrad,
no doubt, no doubt.
You
no,
know,
no doubt.
Man, I mean,
can't forget.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, it's and of course, on the West Coast, you said you settled down in Oceanside. That's not far from San Diego, is it?
No, not far at all. Not far at all. It's actually San Diego
yeah.
County.
Yeah, so you figure that's a shout out. You know, to San Diego, man. You know, yeah, man. Shout out to the San Diego heads, of course. Ron Kine, you know, Mitchie Split, Ryan Anthony, you know, all
that's
them putting
fact.
Down
that's
out there,
fact.
Man. Yeah,
that's
you know,
a
Lincoln
fact.
Park, stand up, yeah, man.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
Definitely,
that's
man.
A fact.
I mean, obviously, yes. I mean, definitely. So you got, like you said, you know, Streets. You got a very well-rounded hip-hop education, you know, from both coasts. You know what I'm saying? In terms of what molded you into the MC that you are today. When did you know that this was a situation in terms of rhyme and what you wanted to do in terms of really making this a thing?
Oh, man. I have wrote a rhyme about Martin Luther King, and this was when I was about 8 years old, and I wrote this rhyme about Martin Luther King. It was around Martin Luther King Day, and in Syracuse, I went to Martin Luther King Elementary School. So, you know, Martin Luther King was a big, big thing to us and a big influence to us, you know. So my very first rhyme that I wrote was about him. And I took it to school, and I said, I recited the rhyme to one of my homeboys, you know, not thinking nothing of it. He goes and he tells the teacher that I can rhyme. You know, so he kind of put me on the spot. So the teacher asked me to come up to the front of the class and would I recite the rhyme in front of the classroom. So, you know, I'm a kid, so I'm shy. You know, I didn't really want to go up there and do it. But, you know, something in me told me to just get up and do it, you know. So long story short, I did it for the classroom. And we went to lunch shortly after, and as I'm sitting at the lunch table with my peers, you know, we see the news cameras start to come in. So as the news cameras are coming in, you know, everybody's wondering what's going on. All of a sudden they say, my real name is Bobby. So they say, Bobby, can you come up to the podium and do the rhyme that you did about Dr. King? So I did it. And I was on the news. So that was like my very first taste of, you know, rhyming and stuff, you know. It wasn't really like my first time rhyming, but it was like my first taste of like stardom or, you know, anything like that.
Man, that's what's up.
And what were some of the key elements of finding your style? Like, you know, finding your style and everything. Were there any challenges in trying to find that first when you were starting off?
I don't really feel I have a style, you know. So I kind of do what the beat tells me to do, you know. So me and the beat are kind of like having a war, you know. And I'm trying to defeat the beat. So, you know, that's how I go into it.
Man, and you know, when you you know, one thing about it, I think, in terms of, you know, in the art of MCing, because it is an art indeed, it's about really being able to find your place in terms of really finding how you can express yourself. I think in terms of hip-hop, I think for this culture that we were born into, that we adore, that we love, that we're children of, there's no greater joy than being able to find, you know, your vocation, you know, through the rhyme illustration, man. I mean, listening to some of your stuff, you know, me and King, you know, had a, you know, pre-production meeting, as we always do, you know, before any show, and I, you know, we were just listening to some of your stuff, man. I'm like, you know, one thing that struck me, you know, from listening to some of your stuff is your ill harmonics in terms of your singing and emceeing. You know, you blend so both effortlessly. Was that something that you always developed from the beginning of when you started rhyming, or did the singing aspect come later on?
No, it kind of developed, you know, just by harmonizing sometime, you know, and like hearing different MCs like Ja Rule and 50 Cent, you know, because they influenced a lot of that, you know, and like Snoop Dogg used to do a little harmonizing with his raps, you know, so I kind of picked it up from them.
Yeah. You know, and definitely
the harmony is what also creates the hit records, and it also creates the timeless records as well. That's a key element to adding what would make dope music.
And you know,
appreciate it, man.
You know, in terms of the godfather of it, you know, in terms of the harmonizing, we cannot continue this conversation without appropriately acknowledging the rest in peace legend, the Hook King himself, the baritone of the boss, the bosses of the baritone, Nate Dogg.
Nate D-O-G. That's a fact. That's a fact. Mr. 213 himself. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
Nate just a dog.
Shameless,
rest in peace,
shameless
baby.
Plug. Look, shameless plug for the 213 album for all y'all out there. If you all have not listened to that 213 album, and thank the hip-hop gods that, you know, Snoop, Nate, and Warren G got it together. It's out of print now, but it's on eBay. Yeah, we're going to plug everybody for where y'all can get it.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait to hear that, man.
Yeah, but they finally, you know, it was back in 2004, and they released it. And it was a banging-ass album. It's just,
oh, man,
it's bittersweet. It's bittersweet because that was the only album they did together. But if there was an album to do with all of them at least being together for that one project, it was a flawless project.
I'm just glad.
You got to check it out, Street. It's a dope record.
I definitely will, man. I'm still a fan of this thing, you know.
Definitely, and we just hear your enthusiasm, your passion, your joy in it. You know, as you grew up, you saw hip-hop really develop in terms, well, from where you started rhyming, where did you see the game at in terms of where hip-hop was in terms of the creative outlet in all aspects, in terms of videos, in terms of how rhymes were constructed, and how artists were really, 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 you know, doing it? Go ahead.
Oh man, I thought that, you know, it was almost undoable, if that's a word, you know, like when I seen, and the guys that I looked up to were like superheroes, you know, so when I seen them in music videos, like, well, the first music videos I probably watched were on The Box.
Yes. Shout out to Uncle Ralph McDaniels. Yes.
You feel me? So that was probably like the first videos I ever watched, man. And, you know, that definitely intrigued me as a kid and made me more want to be into this hip-hop thing, you know? But hip hop come a long way, man. You know, I embrace the new stuff just like, you know, I'm loyal to what is the essence of it, you know.
Definitely, man. And pretty much from where you saw it then to where you see it now, how do you think the game has changed?
It's a young man's game, you know, the entertainment game in general, you know. So, you know, they pay a little more attention to the young guys, but I vibe with the young guys too, you know. So I got a lot of songs with young guys, and you know, sometimes I delve into what they do, you know, just to have an understanding of what the new hip hop is, you know. So I'm not one of them old dudes that's like, oh nah, man, I don't understand this new hip hop, you know. I gotta tune into it and tap into it. So, you know, I try to tap in with the younger generation as well.
Yeah, you don't want to be just old head.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
That's dope, man. I mean, pretty much from when you started, I mean, what was it like in terms of really piecing, you know, everything together, you know? Because, you know, when you speak with so much reference for the young artists and the new artists, you were that yourself in your nascent, you know, in your nascent beginnings, your infancy of really letting it flow. What was that? What was those early sessions like for you in terms of, like, being in the studio or just being by yourself, just writing rhymes, just coming up with concepts and really just figuring how you were going to move it to the next level?
Oh, man, that was the dope part, man, because, you know, there wasn't no Instagram or Facebook or none of that, you know what I'm saying, on the come up. You know, there was just writing rhymes and trying to be the best at it, you know. So coming up, man, I wrote to be the hardest artist out, because that's what it was at the time, you know. So you wanted to be the hardest and you wanted to be the sharpest with your sword. So, you know, I constantly stayed writing rhymes and memorizing the rhymes so that when I got to the studio, I would just be able to lay the rhymes down without having to look at a paper or any of that. Like my uncle and his engineer out in California, the first time I ever went to their studio, the engineer was blown away by how I just went into the studio and laid my vocals down and pretty much just did like half of an album in a session, you know. So they was pretty impressed with that, and I just tried to keep that as my energy, you know.
Definitely. And, you know, one thing about it, Streets, I think, and King and myself, we always talk about this on the air and off the air with our guests, you know, is basically what you said in terms of the commitment to committing to memory, your rhymes. You know, one thing about it is when you really get into it, it is a job at a certain level. It's a job you enjoy, but it is a job, and there's a certain professionalism that comes along with it. And when you're dealing with studio sessions, we've been a studio. We know how expensive it can be in terms of making sure that, you know, in terms of time and then the staff. So really a lot of times, depending on the day, you know, people just want to get in and get out. So they are really like for it if you can come in and just lay it down and it's done just like that.
Right.
Pretty much, you know, because obviously you understood the nuance of this in terms of it's more than just writing rhymes. It's a professionalism that is supposed to be approached in terms of how the business is conducted. What have you learned in the business aspect of not only making sure that you have everything together going into the studio, but in terms of making sure that you have the right people in reference to engineers, mixers, managers, whomever, just anyone in your circle or who comes into the circle of whatever their designated duty is supposed to be?
Well, I'm that guy, so I do all of that. You know
oh,
what
wow.
I'm saying?
Okay.
Yeah, I got my own equipment and my own setup, so I do it all. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
the only thing I don't do as far as my team is make beats. I do have different producers. I have a producer from Madrid, Spain. His name is Grand Raw. And I have another producer named Foul Slurs, and he's from the United States. And I have another producer named G Nice, and he's the DJ from Rochester, New York.
Got the whole team solid and locked down.
Yeah, so yeah. I do got my producers, man, and. But as far as everything else goes, I make sure that what the product I put out to the public is what I want it to be. So that's why I like to be so hands-on with it, you know. And it saves me a lot of money, you know what I'm saying, to keep it real.
And, you know, one thing about it, and we, first off, we applaud you for that, man, because especially with the show that we do. You know, pretty much a shout out to so many of our friends, you know, out there, you know, who have been, you know, from Eric Schroeder of UBO to Dyer Lansky of Die 4 Radio, of course, DJ Sincere of Dirty Basement, you know, and numerous other, you know, of our cohorts, of course, Pittsburgh Pat, you know, we get a lot of help in terms of putting this together, but a lot of times it's King and myself. You know, we really, you know, we, you know, a lot of times we are running the, you know, we understand how it is.
Yeah, we got
you know, in
brains
terms
behind
of,
the operation, the brains in the brawn.
Yeah,
no doubt. No doubt. You know, nobody's
yeah.
going to take care of business for you like you will.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you know exactly the direction you want to go, there's nothing like, number one, and I tell, you know, any artist out there, we've always said this, know exactly what you're in it for when you get in it. And then number
right.
two, you know, be able to just stick with it, you know, and have your vision, you know what I'm saying? And that's something we just respect, that essence of hard work, you know. That's part of what this show is about, you know, giving shine to the independents, you know,
mm-hmm.
because we know what it's like to be there and, you know, getting out there and getting it. When you look at the game today of how the independents have come, because obviously over the past 10 years with social media, with YouTube, with Instagram, you know, with Facebook, with Twitter, I mean, showing our age, you know, taking back 15 years ago. I mean, MySpace was really kind of in its beginnings of really being, you know, the musical social media. Even further is Black Planet. But Black Planet wasn't
yes,
really,
sir.
Of course, nobody was doing that back in the day in terms of, like, doing music. YouTube, of
right.
course, MySpace was where music was really starting to get promoted. When you see a lot of artists today, do you feel they rely on a lot of theatrics rather than, you know, the art to really push their product? Or do you, yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I feel like I love what they do, right? I just
mm-hmm.
wish that there was more individuality in it, you know, because
right.
when you hear it, when you hear one of them and then you hear another one and it sounds almost identical to the last song that you heard, it's kind of hard to decipher who is who and, you know,
right.
who's doing
right.
what, you know, and even where it originated from. You know what I'm saying? Like I like to know where stuff originated from. So, I try to delve into that. But right now, it's like it all sounds the same. Nobody's really stepping out and really, you know, just being themselves. And that's what I try to teach to the young homies is to, you know, just be yourself, man. Because, you know, a lot of these dudes is trying to follow trends, and a lot of these dudes is ending up dying or you know, something crazy happening to him, man. And I don't want to see no young fellas that I know, you know, have to go down that road, or their moms or pops have to go down that road either, man. You know, so I try to teach the youth that, you know, just be yourself. You know, if you feel that's how you need to express yourself, then, you know, that's how you got to do it. You know what I'm saying? I can't tell you how to do your thing. You know, all I could do is try to give you some tools from my experience. You know what I'm saying? So that's just how I try to keep it, man.
And what I hate what's going on is, at the end of the day, what brings us together and why we actually had this show in the first place is the music. Like, at that time when we was coming up, we were just wanting to focus on the music. We ain't really care about the bodies and stuff like that to a degree, or, you know, stuff that they were really doing. It was the music at the end of the day that made us overlook all that. But now they trying to make me bigger than the music.
It's a lot of this about theatrics and acting a fool, man. And, you know, we wasn't on that type of time, man. We always was taught to stay in the shadows and don't have your business out on Front Street. But, you know, now that's the way the fans connect with the artists, and you know, a lot of things changed. And, you know, you could say, you know, till you blew in the face, oh man, I wish they would do this and I wish they would do that. But in all reality, man, a lot of people kind of told me, you know, to do this and do that, and I kind of didn't listen either. You know, I had to go out and experience it the way I had to experience it. So, you know, to each his own, man.
Yeah.
And one thing about it, Streets, that's so real what you said, because going back to some of your influences, you mentioned one of my all-time favorite MCs, E-40. The man doesn't get enough props for what he has done over the years, in terms of the man has released damn near 30 albums, has stayed independent his whole career. And
yeah, he a beast.
Yeah, and for all of y'all out there in the hip-hop universe, about 60% of the modern hip-hop slang that man invented. I'm like, give the man his flowers for the dope linguistics while the man is here. Because E-40, you know, exactly. Thriller, Cabbage, you know what I'm saying? Fetty, you know.
Yeah, man.
You know, I mean, you know, you could even say, you know, Drip, you know, possibly, you know, going back some years, you know what I mean? You know, Papa Collars, I mean, E-40 was pretty much on all of that, you know.
Facts, the hype, all that.
Yeah,
man.
He was
one of the forefathers. That's definitely a forefather of the Bay Area old sound.
Yeah,
that's a
him
forefather.
Too Short.
Him too short.
Richie Rich and Mac Dre. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and one thing about it, like you said, Street, nobody sounds like 40 out there, because nobody can rhyme like him.
Nah, bro. Nah. That's a feat. Nah, that's a fact. That's an original. Can't be copied.
Yeah.
Can't be duplicated.
Yeah,
that's an original.
And one thing about it, man, when we always reminisce on those days, and it's not like we're the grumpy old men who are just screaming at the sky about hating it. We're not, you know. But when we look at it today,
we ain't no bad rappers.
We're not disgruntled employees of hip hop.
No, we're not. The dog.
Hey, tell him why you mad, son. Tell him niggas why you mad.
See, my dog agreed. Hey, yo, you know what, man? I do want to say rest in peace to my dog DMX, man. That's definite. You know what I'm saying? Rest in peace
definitely.
To the dog, man.
From an artist's perspective, how big was DMX to the culture from when he first dropped Get At Me Dog in that spring of 1998? Because hip-hop was kind of going through a very the Shining Age era, of course, with Puff, and X just, like, kicked the door open. Of course, the video. he yells out those up in this line, "Let's take it back to the streets, motherfuckers." I was like,
right.
Whoa.
Right. Yeah, man. I don't even know if we was ready for X, man. But he was definitely needed, man. He was definitely needed, you know? X was definitely needed. And X changed the game. X changed the game for sure, man. He was a definite intricate puzzle piece into this hip-hop game, you know?
Yeah, that shiny suit was gone.
Yeah, it was over for that. It was a wrap for that. You might have got beat up if you came out with a shiny suit.
Man, look.
For real. That made the whole game change. All the singing stopped and all that.
I mean, and then, look, and you figure X would start it off, you know, with his debut, you know, the album is Darkest Selling Hot, released in 98. And then, of course, the locks were, but then, of course, you know, the other part of that was when the locks would eventually get off Bad Boy Records the next year and get, and you know, but of course, actually the next year they got off, that's when the Rough, 99, that was when the Rough Riders, you know what I'm saying, of course, Swiss Beats, you know, the sonic architect,
man,
of it all.
The Rough Riders was, woof.
Yeah, I mean, X pretty much that.
They don't know about that impact out there, man. How big he really was.
Oh, man, X was the god, man. X was the god for sure, man. Definitely influenced my style, man. I got a bunch of tracks where I definitely felt like I was channeling X, you know.
Mhm.
I love a rugged beat, you know.
Go ahead. Yeah,
yes, sir.
And who are some of the producers along the way that you listen to that like really, like you're just like, man, like I would love to jump on a track like that.
Hit the dog.
Oh, man. My dream track is from Dr. Dre, man. That's my ultimate dream beat that I wish that I'm wishing upon a star for, man. You know? Hopefully I could get that before I leave this earth, you know. If not, it'll be a collab with Snoop Dogg, you know.
Definitely. Now, what was it like for Snoop when you first heard him in 92 with Deep Cover with him and Dre? What was that like
Hearing that, what was it, Creep With Me, As I Crawl Through the Hood, when I heard that, man, that took me to another place, man. That took me to another place, for real.
What's crazy all about geniuses, you know what's crazy about creative geniuses is that the records that, for the most part, that we love and adore, they can't stand, because it's crazy how Dre even hates that record to this day.
You know, I'm like that myself with songs. Like, a lot of people, they love this one song called Keep Me On My Toes, and, like, I that song drives me crazy, man. But the people love it, so I perform it every time I'm out for them.
Definitely.
Gotta take care of your fans.
Yeah, and I think that's something always that you gotta channel into it. That's always, now in terms of you said keeping on your toes, why is it that song pretty much you, in terms of why you say that's not one of your favorites in terms of the, what's the story behind that? Well, first off, what's the story behind the song itself?
It's just kind of like a cool, like, bouncy club song, you know? And it was like a song for the time. Like, it didn't seem like a song that would be around for a long time, but it was just a song that I did at the time because it felt good, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of people just caught on to it and enjoyed it. So every time I went out to perform, they wanted me to perform it. So, you know, that's kind of how that ended up.
It's just a trip how.
Yep.
It's just a trip how it be that way sometimes. A lot of the records that people don't like, they end up being the biggest hit record. Just like even when we were going back with DMX, he said he wrote that thing in 15 minutes and he even hated the beat.
Mm-hmm.
Rough Riders Anthem.
Right. Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes those are the jewels, man. Those are the jewels.
Yeah, and I think one thing about it, when you look at over the history with certain tracks, with certain songs in general, you know, sometimes one thing about being an artist is that you never know how certain songs are going to reach people. You know,
right.
there are songs that are released, they're like instant bombs in a good way, you know,
mm-hmm.
they hit, you know, I mean, like, shucks, man. Who can we think of, like, right off the top? Like, when Dr. Dre and Snoop did G-Thing, I mean, it was like, you know, that was just instant, you know, instantaneous. When Ice Cube,
right.
you know, dropped It Was a Good Day, you know, that
right,
was so
right.
different from what Cube had done previously. If I really dig into the crate, on the underground, when Smooth the Hustler and Trigger the Gambler dropped Broken Language,
mm-hmm.
the underground just loved
mm-hmm.
it. Oh, I know, I loved it when I first heard it.
Yeah,
you
man.
Know, I mean, you know, and then you have some songs that are just flat out so outrageously obscene and crazy, but they hit a chord. Like once again, Dr. Dre. With Bitches Ain't Shit. I mean, you know, that was an
right, answer. Right. Hey, man, you know, it's music, man, is all about preference, man. It's all about what people prefer, and, you know, that's how I just kind of stay in the neutral zone when it comes to even, like, the age gap or anything like that, you know. I try to stay in the neutral zone, man, because... You know, that's my place.
Yeah, and I mean, but we take it in other genres. You know, Nirvana.
Right.
I remember this so many years ago in 1991. I was staying over at my aunt's house. Used to love that because she would always let us stay up late. And you know, I was watching Headbangers Ball because I love heavy metal.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like. Maybe like the next to last video that Headbangers Ball is playing on that Saturday going into Sunday morning. So it's like damn near 2 a.m. So I'm just watching, and then I hear this opening guitar down, da down, 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 down. I'm like 13 years old watching this, and then when that drum and that bass and that guitar kick in on that, just I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, man. Hey, man, I listen to all type of music, man, for real, man. I don't just listen to one type of music. I listen to everything, man.
Yeah, when that video was over.
By the time that video was over,
I shit you not, I'm thinking to myself, these motherfuckers are gonna be huge.
Right.
And
you get that feeling.
Two months later, you know, when that song really started catching fire on college radio,
mm-hmm.
it just exploded. I mean, Nirvana
became
that group.
Nirvana was something else, man. It was beyond rock stars, man.
And pretty much ushered in that whole genre.
Y'all got to also mention, too, was what made them big, just like a lot of stars at that time, was there wasn't really a lot of fans couldn't really get too close to them like we can now.
Right. There was a lot hidden about their lives and there was no social media, so everything wasn't on Front Street.
Yeah, and you know the funny thing about them,
You had to really grind it out then.
Yeah. Shout out to Brian Johnson. He does an excellent YouTube series called On the Road, and he did an interview with Dave Grohl, you know, who was, you know, the drummer, and then of course started his own band, the Foo Fighters. Shout out to Dave Grohl, one of the sweetest, nicest guys you will ever meet in all of music. Much love and respect. And Dave was talking about how that jump was from when, you know, they were starting out, and then for all of our listeners, if you can go on YouTube and watch that interview, please do. It's an hour well spent just to hear two legends just chop it up like they've been friends for years. They talked about how, you know, the transition of when Nirvana was kind of starting to, like, they were playing small clubs to when, you know, they just exploded out of nowhere, you know, and then
right.
like literally overnight it changed for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also ushered in that era, because Nirvana, a lot of, you know, heavy metal heads have a lot of simultaneous love-hate relationship because they applaud Nirvana's genius, rest in peace Kurt Cobain, but they also lament in terms of what that killed heavy metal, which I don't necessarily
right.
think it did. I just think music was going in another direction. But that's when,
mm-hmm.
of course, because the grunge factor of rock and roll did not start with Nirvana. They were the biggest, Alice in Chains.
Right, right.
Back in 1990 with Facelift, of course, with Soundgarden's Louder Than Love album, 1989. You had Mother Love Bone, rest in peace Andrew
uh-huh.
Wood. You know,
uh-huh.
this was pretty much where it was starting, and Nirvana blew it off to where you would see Pearl Jam, you would see Soundgarden really go further with it. Rest in peace, Chris Cornell, you know. But they really, it ushered in a genre that really is genius in its own right. Of course, Alice in Chains, Layne Staley, rest in peace. all of these bands were so legendary. When you look at hip-hop in terms of when you see artists, when you watch artists blow, I mean, when you've watched yourself really, like, evolve and come up to your own as an artist, what has it been like of this constant evolution in your craft, your expression, to where you're really connecting with your fans, where people are recognizing you, when your music is really touching, you know, so many parts of the world? How does that feel?
Oh man, that's a different feeling, man. I remember when, pardon me, but
you're good,
I remember when, you know, you couldn't like you were saying earlier, you couldn't just get to the person that, you know, you adored as a fan, you know. You had to go through all these channels to, you know, or go to a concert to see them, or if there was a concert even, you know, you might have only got to see them on MTV or BET or what it was at the time. But, yeah, man, to now just knowing that my music is in, like, China and, you know, United Kingdom and South Africa, and, like, these people, like, hit you up, you know, and they say, yo, man, we love your music and we love what you're doing. And, you know, it's like, it's awesome, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of like, man, I wish, you know, that I had that machine behind me so I could actually go out and, like, tour in these places, you know what I'm saying? That's mm-hmm. the tough thing for the independent artist today is you don't got that machine behind you, so you might not be able to tour like somebody with the machine behind them. But the feeling that it's everywhere, man, is definitely awesome, man.
In terms of watching artists on an independent scale, what you said about being independent, King knows where I'm going because I'm such a big fan of these guys, and they're from upstate New York like yourself.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You already know.
Hey, yo.
I knew right where you was going with that one.
Yeah, you know, to watch Griselda from when they started, because people think that these guys just hit yesterday, and I'm like, no, these guys have been doing it 17, 20 years. They've been doing
it. They've been doing it just as long as I have.
Yeah, you know, seeing y'all from that same upstate New York area, what was it like? Were you privy to those guys when they were starting out, or was it when they blew that's when you really knew about them?
No, I knew of them a little earlier on because there's a DJ out here named DJ Chris G, and he plays everything underground hip hop as well, and he was playing some of their music, and I got to hear some of it a while back before they actually blew and got to deal with Hov.
Mm-hmm. With Rock Nation.
So this was before the whole Eminem thing. Because Conway actually used to like battle rap. So I knew of Conway. But yeah, man, the Griselda dudes is definitely on the ball, man. Them guys definitely doing their thing.
And one thing about it is that, like yourself, they never compromise their style, and they always stay true to themselves. How much of that was an inspiration to you in terms of knowing that it can be done, in terms of not having to change?
I thought that was super dope, you know, that they definitely kicked in the doors on some original hip hop music, you know, and they got respected for it too, you know. So that's the ultimate goal of it all, you know, is to kick in the doors with your style and be respected. So, you know, big salute to them for that.
Do you think a lot of artists from that level of trying to get in the machine? Because one thing about it is the machine, you know, we're almost at 400 episodes for this show. All praise to God. You know, we are so grateful. We're so blessed. And we've talked to so many people in terms of independence. We've talked to majors. We've talked to the legends. We've talked to the up-and-comers. You know, we on Off the Cuff Radio, this show is all-encompassing, welcoming everybody from all walks of hip-hop. And we talk with a lot of our guests about what it's like in terms of staying independent versus that machine, in terms of being with a major, but also what you might have to sacrifice to be on a major. You know, what is your opinion in terms of the pros and the cons in reference to having that major backing? Being an artist,
I think if you stay independent, then you stay doing what you love, and you keep say so over your masters. You know what I'm saying? And that's, as an artist, if you know you really want to be true to yourself at the end of it all, you know, because you could make the music. you can make the music and people could not like it, but as long as you like it and you stay true to it and that's what you love to do, then you know that's what you have to do for yourself as an artist. You know, if you in it for money and you're trying to do the quick thing and, you know, jump on the wave, then you won't end up lasting as long. I don't feel, you know. I feel that I stayed around because I stayed true to what I do. So and people respect me more for doing that.
Gotta stay solid.
Yeah, you know, and
do you care to tell people the importance behind having a solid team coming into this game?
Yeah. You have to stay solid and stay on your square, man. You can't be flipping and flopping in this thing, you know. You got to be solid with your team and be solid with yourself, man. If you ain't solid with yourself, you can't be solid with nobody else. You know what I'm saying? So first and foremost, you got to be solid with yourself, and then be solid with your team, because, you know, you want everybody to be eating the same, and you don't want nobody to have no feelings about nothing. So, you know, long as everybody eating equally, then, you know, everything should be good.
Yeah, you know. And,
yeah, because it is a bipolar business.
That's a fact. Yeah,
one minute they love you, next minute they hate you, you know?
Yeah, and you know, that's always the ebb and flow of the business in that capacity, because we have seen so many artists, you know, King, you know, shout out to my bro, because he always has a funny joke about the Larry Holmes status when people are washed up, you know, and, you know, we see a lot of artists, you know, and disclaimer, we only mention these names on Off the Cuff Radio just as a reference point, is not to, you know, ram them up the ass trying to fillet them. It's like when you look at artists like, it's like when you look at Chingy, you know, I mean, Chingy at one time was like the biggest artist out there. Then Chingy is like, you know, and then when he wasn't hot no more, Chingy wasn't making music that wasn't hot, and the videos weren't that good. I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, we see artists like Nelly. You know, Nelly was huge at one point, but Nelly doesn't have that presence in the game like he once did. You know,
right.
And it's not to shade anybody, but it's to show how fast the preference of the listening public can change, because one thing about it with music, and especially hip-hop in general, is it's always a volatile change. It's always going in different directions. I mean,
right.
You know, we look at, you know, how rap really in earnest started, and not so much started, because rap started almost 20, 30 years before, going back to James Brown. Even Johnny Cash had a hip-hop influence of how he did music. Of course, you know, the Last Poet, you know, Sugar Hill Gang, you know, but when the 80s, like when we, but by a lot of hip-hop scholars, from when we look at the 80s, for when hip-hop in earnest really became big, I mean, you had the party rap, you know, you had LL, you know, of course, you had Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five with a message that was really not so much a hardcore song, but it was really about talking about the hood. You would see Public Enemy come in 87 with their debut, Yo Bum Rush the Show, that really started putting it on a political slant, which would be followed by KRS-One. You know, you would see X-Clan. Mm-hmm. You would see this would, then it would go from the party rap to the, you know, to the conscious Afrocentric rap. Even LL caught a couple of straight shots in 89 when he did a Walking with a Panther, because he did that record during the period of that Afrocentrism hip-hop wave.
Yes, sir.
Said that was a record everybody hated when he did that, because
of
the time it was released. Then we go into the 88, even before, a year before that, N.W.A., straight out of Compton, kicks the door down on gangster rap, which was still predated in 86 by Ice-T, when he dropped, I believe, Ron Page. I believe that was his debut in 86.
Now, when did Schoolie D drop 6 in the Morning, though?
And you know what? And you know what, Street? You're absolutely right, because Schoolie D is widely, by deep scholars, considered to be the godfather of gangster rap music.
He's
considered
to
be the first one. Because Ice-T even said that, because if you listen to Ice-T's, you know, on Rhyme Page, his rhyme cadence is almost directly derived from Schoolie
D. That track.
Ice-T will tell you that himself. Ice-T will tell you that himself, that he patterned his early style after Schoolie D. before he really kind of settled into his own. But when you look at how rap music has evolved and how it has changed, I mean, you know, then you saw the mid-2000s. You saw the trap rap really become big. T.I. gave his name. We got to give Tip his credit. Nobody, you know, trap music, he gave it his name. But even in 97 with Ghetto Mafia, King was hitting me the game, you know, straight out of D.E.C. in 97. You know, they were considered to be the first trap rappers. Yeah. You know what I mean? Then you see, you know, Jeezy, Gucci, you know, come in with a more of a with a harder edge. Even in 2001, you had Ludacris and more of the party rap, and of course him, Lil Jon, you know, really brought that Atlanta crunk sound. I mean, there are just so many different directions that the craft has gone over the years in terms of where we have seen a change. I mean, then we get into the early 2010s, we start seeing the snap rap, you know.
Atlanta. The shot that, boys, that's when Atlanta took over. Atlanta took over. Atlanta's on a run right now.
They still got it.
Yeah, they on the run. They got it right now. People moving from New York to Atlanta. Like, you know?
Because that rent is cheaper. And the houses are cheaper.
It must be. It must be. That's the mecca for hip-hop right now, though. Atlanta.
I know this is not meant to be a loaded question, but I know this is a sensitive topic, Street. How do you feel about some New York rappers who kind of change up their style to sound like Southern rappers? Do you think it's just a sign of the times, or do you think they need to stay in their roots of where the hip-hop is?
Yeah, I feel like we lost our sound as a region by going and catering to the sound of the time, which is saddening. New York definitely had its own sound growing up for me, you know. Every place that was a staple in hip hop had its own sound as far as hip hop went, you know?
Yeah, you know, but I think a lot of times too, and I think artists really need to understand this, is that, like you said earlier, there's no other way you can be yourself but to be yourself. And when you're dealing with, I think, that level of being, because now with social media being the way it is, I think people are looking at this as a microwave media to success in terms
of
basically coming in where they can just be a personality, you know, over the top.
An influencer.
An influencer, yes. And sometimes the art of it is not, for what hip-hop is supposed to represent, is not there more than it is people just want to be famous than the CC, the CCE. And we don't mean continuous criminal enterprise, more about the clout-chasing era. You know, it's just about people just wanting to be famous.
The viral, going viral. Everybody want to go viral.
Like,
people are so obsessed with the viral thing. I would say this, if it was to where you could get a dollar a like, man, I could say go do what you got to do to go viral. But, man, you ain't even getting a check to go viral. Like
right,
that.
They got people lighting themselves on fire and stuff, you know, to go viral. Like, I'm not
like
that. I don't need to go viral that bad, you know. I don't need to go viral that bad.
Yeah, if they was cutting us like $2 a like, I'd say, where'd you light it up at? Where's the gasoline?
Yeah, but they ain't even getting paid, man. They just going out like fools, man. But you know, sheep will be sheep, man. Sheep will be sheep.
Yeah, And I think that's the troubling part of it in terms of hip-hop, like you said earlier, about how everybody's trying to run behind each other, because as you said, with all the influences you listened to growing up, and we all listened to them in that era, it was actually taboo for anybody to sound like anybody else. I mean, Yeah, and I mean, look, this is off-the-cuff radio, so we pride ourselves on being scholars of this shit.
Now these guys are going here. Yeah. They're like, hey, bro, let me use your style for a minute. Cool.
That wouldn't fly with me on the track.
You do you.
I'm going to do me, bro.
I remember... one of the most infamous call-outs ever in the history of hip-hop in 1995, August 1st, 1995, the seminal classic, Cuban Links. Of course, when Raekwon drops the infamous Short Niggas Bite Us track, the skit, and we all know who he was talking about,
Oh, they bit Nas. Like, they even bit Nas joint.
Look, I don't want nobody sounding like me on a record, period.
He said, Ghost said, I'm going to come see you if you got my style, son. And you know he actually did run up on that Action Bronson kid about sounding like him. People saying that he sounded like Ghost. He ended up running up on Action Bronson.
I'm glad that situation just
that's serious, man. It's kind of like the modern NBA, man. Like, you know, they're more so friendly with each other nowadays. It used to be when if you get dunked on, we wouldn't pick that bed up. You got to get up on your own.
A lot of kumbaya. You know, you got dunked on back then. They walked over you, looked at you all crazy.
Shoot, Jordan won't pick nobody up.
You got embarrassed.
Jordan won't pick nobody up when you dunked on him.
Nah, he just look at you like, look what I did to you.
I think somewhere between a couple of New York basketball players and a lot of other people too, I think they're still having nightmares of Jordan getting up on them and putting it down on them.
Well, that's a fact. You know that.
They ain't even getting no rings because of Mike either.
That's a fact. Embarrassment. It's embarrassment, man.
But nowadays, I think what it is with we live in that whole the participation trophy era, where I remember when
I call it the celebration of mediocrity.
And where do you think the game started changing in that capacity?
Oh man, as you know, everybody needed a little pat on the back. Oh, you're doing such a great job, even if you're not doing a great job. You know, you're kind of doing a decent job. You're not even doing like nowhere near a great job. You know, but you just want a pat on the back, and you want to. Oh yeah, buddy, you're doing great. Like nah, man, it's more to life than that. You know, be real. You know what the problem is? The problem is that and you know, I'm gonna say this because we are off the cuff. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna say this because we are off the cuff. The problem is the homie is too scared to tell his homie that he is whack. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. You like if you are real. Homeboy to your man, tell your man he sucks. Tell him, bro, go rewrite that. And you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Just revamp it all. You know, if it's whack, tell your man that it sucks. Do him a favor, bro. Don't let him get embarrassed out in the public by being whack.
Yeah,
You feel me?
The dog co-signed. The dog's like, yeah, speak on it.
I said what I said. You feel me?
And you know, one thing about it, man, is it's funny because there's so many different levels on that. Because there's a lot of ways to cut that, and everything you said is real. Because on one hand of it, I'm on one side of the coin with it that nobody starts off, you know, with hot fire. You know, that's something that is developed over time.
Right.
Unless your name is Rakim Allah, because he wrote Paid in Full at 17, and we're still like,
yeah, that's
still
a fact.
Amazing.
Catching up.
I mean,
that's a fact.
I mean, that,
yeah.
I mean, that was just an unbelievable. If y'all have not picked up Rakim's book yet, please do. You will enjoy reading it.
Listen to the music, please.
Yes.
Listen to the music.
Yes, but you know, one thing about it is like riding a bike. It takes time, and you're going to fall off a little bit until you actually learn your balance. And being an MC is a very intricate and intimate art in terms of expressing yourself. And we do have, I mean, and that's just an acknowledgement, you know, of what it takes to really get nice on the mic, because everybody doesn't always start off, you know, with that heat seeker.
Right.
But there's a difference between you know, trying and failing, but you eventually really find your footing. And then when you really don't even, you never even get off the ground, period. And then it, you know, because it's one thing when you kind of, like you said, Streets, where you kind of get that, you know, that pat on the back, you know, just kind of the encouragement in terms of like, you're not really great, but then it's a situation where the reality hits for some of these artists that it's just, and we all know, because I'm not going to single out an area, because every area in this country has one. You know, always that rapper that, you know, there's a difference between a rapper that is dumb nice, that just ain't got an opportunity, even if they're 50, and then that rapper at, you know, 30 who's still trying to do it and was never nice to begin with.
Right,
and
right.
Still tries to say that everybody hating on them and nobody wants to succeed.
Right.
I will never be that arrogant enough to say how the game goes in terms of what, how it happens for everybody, because everybody's circumstances is different. But I will say this, and I will stand on saying what I said when I say this, and me and King have talked about this off the air, on the air. There is a situation where if you are really dope, and legitimately dope to the point that you got your hood really rocking with you, if your hood fuck with you heavy, you're gonna get notoriety and respect. Might even make a little money in the hood. You might not go all over, but if your hood
right.
rock with you in a big way, you're gonna eat in your hood. But
mm-hmm.
if you're not even really eating in your hood, I will never forget this. Shout out to A&E on the Compton documentary when they interviewed Game. When Game talked
mm-hmm.
about his meeting with Dre, and Dre asked Game, is your hood fucking with you? And Game was like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, they fucking with me. And Dre said, good, because if your hood don't fuck with you, the world won't fuck with you.
Fuck with you, right.
And they just
you
try
know,
to pull a fast one, try to go outside and
mm-hmm.
blow. It don't work that
mm-hmm.
way.
Nah.
I'm not going to say this artist's name. I'm in Hampton Roads, Virginia, 2 up, 2 down, Southside, VA, where I reside. I'm not going to mention this artist's name, but there was an artist who, and I won't even mention the name of his song, because that's everybody's going to know who it is. And I'm not trying to put nobody on blast. I'm just going to say about how people try to kind of change it up. This artist had a song on YouTube, and it did really well. But instead of trying to rep where he was from in Virginia, he tried to rep
mm-hmm.
like he was from another city.
Oh.
In Atlanta. And, you know, it just didn't go over well. You know, and, you know, people were like, well, yo, it's like, I mean, the song was a bit of a, you know, it made a little noise on, you know, So on YouTube, I mean, it got into the, it even got, you know, into the high, you know, high views. But it's like, he was still trying to, you know, pass it off like, you know, he was from Atlanta. And everybody was like, yo, you're not from Atlanta.
Right. The truth will come out eventually.
Yeah, but you know? they was trying to ride that Atlanta way because Atlanta was bubbling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they were trying, but it's like, dude, you know, you gotta, I'm like, and, you know, the artist has been rapping out here for a while, but it's like, you know, they just haven't, you know, are they known? Yes. But have they got to that next level of notoriety? No. And that's the thing about it with the rap game. You know, it's like the NBA, it's like the NFL. Not everybody's going to make it. You could be nice.
Right.
And you won't make it, and even in the wildest twist of fate, you could be asked and you'll make it, but you may not. But then it turns into like Snoop said with the NFL, not for long, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's just wild to see how the game changes a lot, man, because, like I said earlier, we got so many artists that were really, you know, they got a little bit of notoriety, but the reality was they got exposed, that they really weren't, they were just more or less a beneficiary of the fad that was going on in the music, but in terms of actually being integral to it.
Right, no street cred. You know, street cred,
yeah,
still matters a little bit.
Yeah, it does, and not even so much no street cred. Street is just about the fact that they just, their music just wasn't good. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? And then, and eventually they're, I mean.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the music got to be good at the end of the day. Because looking, for example,
right.
with Drake got writers, he got exposed
right.
many times, but people don't even care about that because the music still hit.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, and he could hear this, and he might get pissed, and guess what? We don't care if he's mad at all. Soulja Boy.
Right.
I mean, Soulja Boy has not released an. He hasn't released an album in 12 years. I'm respectful for Soulja Boy because of what he did on an independent scale, because he was doing it as a youngin, doing shows
oh, yeah.
before he got big.
Yeah, he was.
So
like,
I give him all
the
respect.
He was like the first viral
yeah,
rapper.
He was the first artist to really use the internet to move his music on MySpace. So that
yeah.
was marketing genius. But the reality
mm-hmm.
was, he came along in an era of rap music where the snap rap era was big, but, you know, it was only fleeting. You know, same thing as the Shot Boys, D. Pharrell, you know, Crime Mob, you know, all of them, you know, they just came along in that era. And they, you know, Franchise Boys, you know, they made that song for the era, but it was just something that when that era ends, it's like, you know, what's next? You
right.
know, and you haven't seen them in years. And that's no shade
yeah.
to them. It's just the game changes. And you've got to have
yeah.
something that really, you know, resonates for the time.
Right.
You know, you got to be able to,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know.
You
got to
move with the time, man. That's
yeah.
for sure.
So in terms of, you know, in addition to your rapping, what are your other interests in terms of what do you like to do on your off time being an artist?
Oh, man. I got a pretty big family. I got four kids. I've been married for 16 years this year. You know, and
that's
I got
beautiful.
Four.
That's beautiful.
I got four grandkids, man. So you know,
wow.
Life is always busy, even when I'm not rapping. You know,
that's beautiful, man. How fulfilling is it to have, you know, to have that family unit that supports what you do, and to know at the end of the day, your dad and granddad when you come home. How important is that? How fulfilling is that?
I would be a knucklehead if it wasn't for that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I would truly be lost
and probably in the streets for real, you know, or dead or in jail if it wasn't for them, you know. So that's everything to me.
Family keeps a man disciplined.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
And one thing about it, because we see so many situations in the hood where sometimes the family structure is dysfunctional and even broken. How important is it, do you think, for artists in hip hop to really uplift and really show that it is okay, it is cool to, you know, show I have a wife, I have a kids, or, you know, even from the women perspective, that I have a husband, I have kids, you know, and everything is, you know, like, it's okay to not be, as we say in show business, on all the time. It's okay to be in a relaxed state, to be at home and to just chill out and just be with your loved ones and just enjoy that, you know, off time, that downtime. How important do you think that is?
I think it's pretty important, you know, to let people know too that you are like a real person, you know, and not just like somebody on their screen, you know. Because if you're not letting nobody into that, then, you know, you're just kind of giving them a false sense of reality that you just always turned up and you always in the club, or, you know, you always in the studio or whatnot, but, you know, you're not really doing nothing else with your life.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times a lot of artists get caught up in the fame of it, because the fame is good, you know, but even then, you know, we're all older. So we come from a generation that anonymity and private, you know, ness is always essential, because not everybody needs to know your business. You know, I guess that's just about as real as I can say it, because, but I think it also is important to let everybody know, you know, like, you know, you said, like, you know, we all agree that it's cool to let everybody know it's okay to be a square at some level in terms of having a sense of responsibility and accountability.
Squares last long. That's, you know. Squares last long. If I can say, I can't say it no better than that. You know, squares make it to the age of 50 and, you know, 60 and stuff like that.
Where do you think the game changed streets in terms of? Yeah.
No.
Definitely. Where do you think? Where do you think the game changed in terms of where? Because you know, when we listened to gangster rap coming up, it was telling a real story. It wasn't necessarily glorifying the streets, but it was telling it from a perspective of people who had been out there or had legitimately seen things. And now it's like some of these artists out here are really rhyming or even acting like they're on a suicide mission on the block. Like they really, really want to get out there and get crazy. Where do you think it started changing to where it became a cautionary tale to where in some instances it's almost like, you know, irresponsible and reckless violent behavior is even being encouraged at some level?
It's when they introduced like them 360 deals where, you know, they just come in because it's a fad and they sign these young kids. These young kids do something crazy, get themselves killed or, you know, or get themselves sent to prison, and then the money goes back into the companies. You know what I'm saying? Like, the kids don't understand that because they're kids.
Yeah. And I know we beat a dead horse with this a lot, but when we look at Tekashi's situation about, because we didn't really know, and shout out to Sean Sotero. We had him as a guest about a year and a half ago, Complex Magazine. Basically, he started researching from beginning to end, from that whole case to the trial to the end of it. Great guy. You know, 6ix9ine was just really a kid when we saw everything come out as it did, who was just trying to get in the game. and aligned mm-hmm. himself with some street guys who were real goons. You
mm-hmm.
know, a lot of jokes have been made, this, that, and the other, but the fact is, you know, Treyway, you know, those guys were real street guys, and 6ix9ine
mm-hmm.
wasn't, but he wanted to
right.
align. But he felt like this was a situation that if he could boost his celebrity being attached to real street guys, that this would give him the credibility. But when everything came down like it did, he found out that he wasn't ready for that life like he thought he was. The prospect
mm-hmm.
of doing 45 years in prison will do that to you.
Right. Yeah.
But more than anything, do you think it's more or less artists look at, well, not artists, the label look at certain ways that they can exploit the artist simply for kind of trying to dictate culture, or the fact that a lot of these kids at the beginning, I guess it's kind of a stilted and even discombobulated inquisitive, because I'm trying to really word it in a capacity that I want, in terms of where you see a lot of these kids coming into the game who are not polished, but in the artist's eyes, they're marketable, even if madness comes from that marketability. I guess that's what I'm trying
to
say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, that's because there's no artist development or nothing like that, you know? They see the kid, they see if they look marketable, or they tell them, hey, look, go get 100 tattoos on your face and then come back. And then we'll give you a deal. So what's the kid gonna do? Kid's gonna go get 100 tattoos on his face and come back to get the deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what any other kid would do that doesn't know any better or is hard up, you know.
They never call that lazy marketing.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely.
Lazy marketing.
I think that's
like, that for marketing purposes, and we ain't got to really put no legwork in when it comes to the music.
Yeah. But definitely, at the end of the day, I think the youth really have to understand at the end, you know, that at the end, think about what it's worth when you're aligning yourself with certain people. And this is not to say all labels are bad and all people are bad in the industry, because they're not. We know a lot of great people in
right,
the industry.
No.
We're friends with a lot of them. But you do have to watch who you're dealing with. Last question, because we got to wrap it up in a few. How important, because A&Rs are not necessarily in the game like they used to in terms of artists and repertoire and in terms of development, how important do you think it needs to be for labels to have these individuals in to properly cultivate, monitor, and develop the talent that's coming to labels?
Just for the labels alone, just as a liability aspect, you should want to always have an eye on your investment, you know?
Mm. Yeah,
I know I would. If I was a label, I would want to have an eye on my investment at all times.
Definitely, man. Well, look, we got to wrap this up. Streets the Villain. This was a pleasure. This was enjoyable.
My pleasure, man.
Much love to you and your family, man. You know, thank you so much. You're welcome back anytime. That goes without saying. We will be in touch with you on, you know, between, you know, phone calls and IG and then, you know, of course, on your YouTube page, man. Is there any plug your social media so everybody knows where to find you?
Oh, man, on Facebook, it's at TheVillain315. On Instagram, at TheVillain315. Twitter, at StreetTheVillain. And Spotify and everything else, StreetTheVillain.
Man, once again, thank you for the wisdom, the jewels. This has been great, man. I mean, to deal with you on this level, man, it's such a privilege. Stay kingly in the wisdom, and so royal in the realness, man. We appreciate you so much, man. Thank you.
Likewise, family. Likewise. I appreciate y'all having me.
Anytime y'all need me on the show or need my experience, just let me know, man. I'll be right there.
Definitely, thanks, man. Bubba. Appreciate you. All right, and another
y'all fellas be good.
Yes, sir. You too. Thank you.